This is Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to In the Trenches. This is Ian Beckles, and this is my podcast that will be going on at least through the NFL football season, and maybe we'll see if we'll go out after that because people always want to be talking football. I know I do. In the Trenches, going to be talking primarily about the Buccaneers, but also talk about all the goings on around the NFL and all the crazy stuff happening with suspensions and people kneeling down for the anthem, and it's happening more often now. So it's something that's going to be resurfaced. Colin Kaepernick still doesn't have a home, and there's still people kneeling. So people ain't scared, I guess. They're trying to stand for something. But this is going to be my podcast every week. You definitely want, once the Buccaneer season starts, people really want to get ramped up and talk Buccaneer football. So you definitely want to tune in for that. But you're already tuned in, so you're ready to understand what I'm trying to get accomplished. If you want to give me a call, or not give me a call, but because we're not on radio, if you want to contact me, go to Ian Beckles at Radio Influence. And if you have a question, you can ask me, and then I'll bring it up on the air, and we'll talk about it. I'm sure you guys have some wonderful questions, as you did when I was on the air for many, many years. So, first and foremost, our Tampa Bay Storm are playing tonight, and I'm doing the color commentating. And they're playing Cleveland. It's the playoffs. There's a whopping 5 teams in arena football now. So everybody but one team makes the playoffs. And if you win one game, you're in the championship game. So Philadelphia won yesterday. Philadelphia barely ever loses, by the way. I think they're 15-1 this year, maybe 16-1. They won a championship last year. And I'm not going to say they're unbeatable because they were in a fight yesterday. But they're definitely going to be, you know, the favorite. But if you get into the game, crazy things happen, okay? They lost one game this year, so they're definitely beatable. But our Storm are playing tonight. I'll be in the broadcast booth with Derek Sharp, and we're hoping that our Storm win and get into that championship game. Now we'll talk about some real football. Our Buccaneers played some real-ish type football on last week, and I watched it, and I watched it over, and I watched it over again because that's what I normally do. You know, it's really hard to evaluate players sometimes when you watch something once because things aren't always as they appear at first glance. So I watched it 2 or 3 times, not the whole game because at the end of the game, you know, there's UPS drivers and, you know, people that won't be in the league, obviously. But, you know, watching the game, first and foremost, I want everybody to know this. When you talk about preseason football, I tell everybody every year, don't overreact, okay? Because there's 32 teams overreacting after the first preseason game. It doesn't tell you what's going to happen later on in the season. You know, if you look at the Bucs defensively last week, I was like, they didn't look like world beaters to me. Offensively, they looked good. They moved the ball. But you can't put that much stock into one quarter of starters playing. And people do it every year, okay? They'll say, oh, my God, Jameis looked good. Well, first of all, Jameis is a good football player, okay? And if there's people playing good football around Jameis, we're going to be fine. But you can't evaluate from that little bit of football, especially in the preseason. Because, listen, as a starter, I was trying to get the hell out of there without getting hurt, okay? I was still out there fighting, no doubt. But when you look at who's on the other side, if you're an offensive player, the defense is going to be in something very vanilla probably. They're not coming out with the elaborate blitzes and the schemes that they would during a regular season. So it's really hard to evaluate players. And, you know, if I had a nickel for every football player that looked great in preseason that never did anything in a regular season, I'd be a rich person. It happens every single year on every single team. So the Buccaneers went out there. They lost the game 23-12, to Cincinnati. I've had NFL coaches, I've heard many of them say the score is irrelevant in the preseason. It really is, okay? Because let me tell you how it goes. if your ones look good, the rest doesn't really matter, okay? If your ones come off the field looking good, because that's kind of what your head coach wants to do. He wants to get your ones off the field when they look, when they feel good and look good, especially in the first preseason game. So if your ones look good, it doesn't really matter if you what your twos and threes look like, because they will play a little bit sprinkled here and there, but that's not the nucleus of your football team. So, you know, the score itself doesn't, it really doesn't matter. And, you know, like I said, there's going to be people overreacting about the game, and you just can't evaluate a player like you should, like you can, and a team like you can by a preseason game. What you can do is you can see an athlete that lost confidence, and Roberto Aguayo lost confidence, period, done, over with, end of story. Now, the confidence he left, obviously, in his college locker room, was a fabulous college football player. And listen, if you talk about one position that should translate to the NFL, it should be kicker. I mean, there's no factors. When you're an offensive lineman and you play in college and you excel, when you get to the NFL, boy, I tell you, it gets a lot faster and it doesn't work quite often. But you're a kicker. It's just you and the football. And you can kick in the offseason with nobody else around. I mean, it's weird. Now, in college, he was a fantastic kicker. Last year, he sucked here, okay? First of all, Jason Light picked him in the second round. I said at the time, that's a stupid pick. I don't care how good he is. Odds are you're not going to be that great, okay? It's a stupid pick. Because, first of all, I think you could have got him in the fourth round. And that second round pick, boy, you can get you a great pass rusher, which we still need, by the way. And to pick up a kicker, I just don't think kickers are that relevant. Unless, you know, you're my boy from Baltimore, Justin Tucker, who was a beast last year. Aguayo hit 71% of his kicks last year, which is really, really, really bad, okay? Surprised if he wasn't a second round pick, they might not have invited him back this year. Okay, so you talk about Justin Tucker. Aguayo was 22 for 31. That means he missed 9 kicks. Okay, Justin Tucker last year was 38 for 39. Now I can say that kickers don't win or lose games, but when you kick 38 field goals in a year, you done won some games, no doubt about that. So we're at a point now where Roberto Aguayo, who got picked up by the Bears, by the way, and Connor Barth is there with the Bears, which is about as ironic as can be. Why would the Bears pick up a young kid that can't make a kick in Tampa? I don't understand that. You know what Roberto Aguayo needs? He needs a psychiatrist. He needs a sports psychologist or a psychiatrist and to sit him aside and calm him down because, you know, to me, kicking is like golf. And when you see somebody that can't hit the fairway, it's not physical, it's mental. And when you see this young kid on the sideline, obviously he wants to excel, he wants to succeed, but he didn't want to go back out there. I saw it in his eyes. When he went out there, I looked at him, I go, he don't want to be out there, because he knows if he misses the kick, he's done. And as soon as he missed it, I had a bunch of people here watching the game, I go, he's done, it's over. So they cut him, he's gone, good riddance, he's a Bear now, and we move on. Now, the Buccaneers re-signed, they had Nick Folk here. And, you know, they're not just going to give it to Nick Folk. He has to obviously earn it. They brought this other kid in, Zach Hawker. I don't know that much about him. He's going to be battling Nick Folk. And you know what's crazy in the NFL? At the beginning of the season, don't be surprised if neither one of those guys make the team. You have to earn it as a kicker. You're just not going to make it just because. Like, if you're starting at right guard and the guy behind you is pushing you, one of you guys are going to play during the season. And kickers, there's just so many kickers out there. And the kicker's the one position where you can just plug somebody in on any team at any time because there's no playbook. They don't need to know any plays. Just kick the damn, you know, football through the goalpost, which is very hard to do, by the way. I don't know if you've ever tried to do it, but it's pretty damn hard to do. I mean, I'm a pretty athletic guy, but I don't know if any time I could have kicked a 30-yard field goal. And Aguayo's leg is not in question. His mental capacity is in question. And once again, he had that look in his eye, and it wasn't the eye of the tiger. I don't know what it was, but it was the eye of get me the hell out of here. I can't figure this whole thing out. Okay, getting to the Buccaneers game with Cincinnati. I thought the first team offense moved the ball well. To me, Jameis is the least of my worries, okay? The kid can play, okay? He's doing things now that he didn't do 2 years ago. I can see it. To me, the most important thing for him is health. He has to stay healthy because his legs are very important to him. And if you're watching Jameis, he's doing a great job of feeling the pressure, moving around, and finding the opening spot to go, and lengthening plays. If you look at quarterbacks like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady, they're not fast guys. And you know what? Jameis is not that fast. You have to have a feel for the pocket. Sometimes you have fast quarterbacks that want to get the hell out of there that give up more sacks than slow quarterbacks, okay? Having a quarterback that's athletic sometimes can be, you know, can lead to more sacks. Jameis is an athletic guy. He's quick enough, and he's starting to feel things. And, you know, to me, that's an innate thing. You can practice all you want, but that's something you're going to feel in the pocket. You see the great ones sometimes. They don't see something, they'll feel it in the pocket. And I've seen quarterbacks climb up in the pocket, and I don't even know why they did it. Peyton Manning's a great example. God, I mean, Peyton Manning, I know if we race now, I could beat Peyton Manning in a race. Peyton Manning is slow. But I tell you what, he used every inch that he had to his advantage. And, you know, that a lot of that is knowledge, a lot of that is repetition. And Jameis, to me, was going to be fine. There was a couple plays in the end zone that I know he wants back. The one first play, the fade to Mike Evans. Just listen, you have Mike Evans out there who's in beast mode all the time. If you throw a fade, what you can't do is throw it out of his grasp. He has to be able to get his hands on it. That's a mistake. And in the second time on the goal line, they try to throw a back shoulder fade, which is another way that Mike Evans could use his big body. And he threw it to the front of his body. So those were mistakes that Jameis made. And, you know, that's what preseason's for, making mistakes. He's not going to make those mistakes going on through the season. But as a whole, I thought he, you know, had a good command of the offense. It's good to see DeSean Jackson catch a pass. O.J. Howard didn't do a whole lot, although I was watching him, blocking. And to me, if you can block, that's half the battle. You know, receiving is great. And I'm going to bring up this name that I should never bring up again, but Austin Seferian-Jenkins was a guy who would catch a pass a game, would be a big catch, and I would look at the rest of his game, and he was soft as tissue paper, okay? He couldn't block. And if somebody can't block, they can't be part of your regular offense because you got to be able to run the football. The Bucs aren't good enough to go out there and throw the ball like the Patriots could or Green Bay can. They're not that good. They have to run the football. That's going to be important. So if O.J. Howard wants to be a regular part of the offense, he's going to have to figure out a way to block. And you know what? I saw some really good things blocking. Cameron Brate is a guy who's surfaced, and I like the kid as a football player. I think he's going to get better because of O.J. Howard. He's not going to have to play as many plays. And if you have, and I saw a few times they had O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate on the field at the same time. And, you know, I don't think the Bucs have ever had this many weapons. Actually, I'm positive the Bucs have never had this many weapons before. Okay, so Jameis, they equipped him with a bunch of weapons, and, you know, so far so good. I've heard him practice. I've got a chance to watch a few practices, but you can't really see what's going on out there. I heard O.J. Howard looks good out there. I heard Cameron Brate looks good. DeSean Jackson, you know, can't be covered because of his speed. And Mike Evans is another guy that I'm certainly not going to worry about. He's going to be just fine because he's a hell of a football player. Now, offensively, I think is going to be our strength. I keep on hearing every year that we're going to be better on defense, and every year I believe I get disappointed. And watching the defense, they looked a lot like they normally do, unfortunately. Like they brought in that kid Baker up the middle. I know I saw Danny Shelton, who's a big old strong dude, but they looked very, very, very soft in the middle. People were just running the ball down our throats. We can keep on talking about Gerald McCoy, but okay, and I'm very critical of Gerald McCoy. I've said that. Go back and watch the tape, and look at where Cincinnati is running the football. They're running the football directly at Gerald McCoy. He made one tackle, and it was 6 yards down the field. A defensive tackle, that is not your job to make a tackle 6 yards down the field. A defensive tackle makes a tackle on the line of scrimmage, or it's to the linebackers. One time I see Gerald McCoy get pushed right out of the hole. The other lineman goes up on Quan Alexander. Cincinnati gasses him up the middle for a big play. That's not good football. Getting good get-offs and all that kind of stuff is great, but it's the other things that irk me. And I played against some of the great ones. Just line them up. They're all going to the Hall of Fame. Most of them are already there. And they didn't ever allow that to happen, okay? You never push Reggie White out of the hole and cut. It just doesn't happen, okay? So to be considered great for me, you got to play a lot like those old great ones. And it's I don't see it. I really don't. We brought some big old greasy guys in the middle. I like it, but they didn't play real greasy last week. So that definitely has to change. Quan Alexander is a superstar, okay? I don't know if I've ever seen a faster linebacker. I've seen some fast ones. Shelton Quarles was fast. You know, Hardy Nickerson was tougher than fast. We've seen, Derrick Brooks was fast, but Derrick Brooks was a different breed and a different position. Quan Alexander from middle linebackers might be the fastest middle linebacker I've ever seen, ever. Last year, he led the NFL in solo tackles. And if he stays healthy, he's a guy who's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. There's no doubt in my mind. Staying healthy is going to be the big thing, obviously, and staying out of trouble. But Quan Alexander is real. I mean, I think he's going to take a step forward this year and, set himself apart from the others, because the first time I saw the kid play, I was in love with his football acumen. Just he can fly, and he brings hats, and he has a bad attitude. That's one thing that the Bucs need, is more bad attitude, and that's everywhere. I saw Sweezy play a little bit. I liked a little bit what I saw. I saw him struggle a little bit against Geno Atkins, but that's Geno Atkins. Geno Atkins is a hell of a football player. Maybe one of the best defensive tackles in the league. So I'm not going to hold that against him. Okay, didn't do anything glaringly bad. But, I saw some bad attitude in him. Bad attitude means, some grit. If you look, you remember back in the day, Donald Penn had a little bit of that. And that's going back a little bit now. And he's still in the league, still doing the same thing. But we need some of the offensive linemen to do that as well. But, to me, Quan Alexander, he's the guy. He's our spiritual leader on defense, just like Jameis is on offense. What I like to see was that play on that Hargraves made in the end zone, right before the end zone, about the 2-yard line. I mean, that was an all-pro play, okay? Like, average cornerbacks don't make that play. And Vernon Hargraves last year was, when you're a young football player, sometimes they don't want to put you in certain situations. I think he's ready for prime time as well, because that was a veteran football play, okay? We need to see more of that. Now, defensive back play in general, to me, is all about pass rush. We have talented enough football players. If we don't get a pass rush, we're going to be in trouble. Because go down, look at our schedule, look who we have to play against, and you can't allow a lot of quarterbacks that we're going to be playing against any time at all. And you can't let a quarterback into the caliber of Jameis, who's still a very young football player. Anybody we play against that gives Jameis a lot of time, Jameis is gonna shred him, especially with the talent that we have now. So, looking back at that game, you look at the ones. Our ones looked okay. Did we play like a 10-6 team or 11-5 team? No, absolutely not. We obviously have a lot of improvement to do. But you know what I mean? I think people see it and they feel it. I mean, I know people are definitely feeling it at One Buck Place. I know the fan base is definitely feeling it. And the expectations are high, but that, I'm telling you, that doesn't always mean a whole lot. What I like to see in preseason, and I'm the kind of guy that sits back and I watch the twos and I watch the threes too, because to me it's all football. And what a lot of people don't realize is, and a great example was Ryan Fitzpatrick, who went in the game and played okay in the second quarter and didn't look bad, and then came back later and looked pedestrian, like he didn't look right, okay? And I expect Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's played a lot of relevant football, to tear up threes and fours, okay? So I didn't think he looked that great in the second half. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick, if you look at backup quarterbacks, I would have to rank him one of the best backup quarterbacks in the league, because he's been through it. He's an intelligent guy. But for an intelligent guy, he does make some bonehead mistakes. He really does. And I've heard he's an intelligent person, but as far as his football IQ, it's questionable. And there's a difference now. I knew very, very intelligent people that when you got on the football field, they didn't quite get it. And what a lot of people don't realize is, especially in a regular season, you know, I came into the NFL in 1990. I was a fifth-round draft pick. And the first practice we went out in Pepin Root Stadium here in the middle of UT, I was on the second team. Okay, I'm a fifth-round draft pick. I don't think anybody really pencils in a fifth-round draft pick for anything. I don't think that's ever happened. So I get in there. There was a starter before me, John Bruin. He was in there. I was in the second string. And I went out in the first practice, and I was trying to break helmets. Okay, that's all I know. And in the second practice, I was starting. So it took me a practice to get into the starting lineup. And there's things that I've found out through the years. You know, when you talk about starters and then twos, there's no really threes once you get into the regular season. What you find out is, and a lot of them won't admit it, there's a lot of guys that are perennial backups that don't really want to get into the game. They just don't. Because you could be a perennial backup and make a lot of money and be on the bench, just be a great practice player. But if you get put into that game against the wrong guy and you can't block him, your career is going to be over. So there's a lot of guys that are really good in this preseason, but, you know, when it comes to the regular season, they can't hack it. You know, if you look back to, once again, Roberto Aguayo, sometimes it's not about being a good kicker. It's about hacking it and dealing with the pressure. And to me, pressure is about all he couldn't deal with. I'm sure he's okay in practice, but once you get out there in front of all those people and there's all that pressure and, you know, you're feeding your family because, you know, that's how you feed your family, then the pressure mounts, and not everybody can deal with that type of pressure. So you want to take a good look at a lot of these twos that are in there and make sure they're ready for prime time. And because once the regular season starts, those twos that you're blocking against in preseason become ones, okay? There's no twos once the regular season starts. So if you got to be ready to go there against anybody. Now, on the offensive line, I saw Ali Marpet miss the game because of his ankle. Everybody's saying it's not a big deal. I'm going to keep my eye on that because, you know, I'm almost positive there's nobody in the Bay Area that's sprained their ankles more than me. Okay, I by the end of my career, I was playing with a plastic boot on my left ankle because, I mean, it would just roll just walking, okay? So I have terrible, terrible ankles. And it's hard because, you know, every time you sprain your ankle, it's brand new and, you know, it takes a while to come back. So the fact that he missed a game is not a big deal. The fact that he has a history of ankle problems is a big deal. And playing with terrible ankles, I know all about it. It's not a lot of fun. Howley went in there, played okay. I just think he's an average player. I'm hoping Marpet is ready to go. Everybody says he's going to be. And, you know, we just need Ali Marpet in there as a big body and a big strong body. And from what I hear, an intelligent player as well. So if we're healthy, you know, with Sweezy and, you know, Dotson, we're going to be a good offensive line. We have a chance to. But, you know, they obviously have to be physical as well. And speaking of being physical, the Buccaneers are in Jacksonville all week. They're going to be playing against the Jaguars on Thursday night, ESPN national game. You know, as a player, boy, I hated to go to other teams in practice. I hated it. It's a lot, okay? You got to travel. You got to deal. You got to be in a locker room you're not accustomed to. And then you're playing against other dudes in practice, and you're learning everything about each other, then you got to play on Thursday. It's just not what I want to do. Okay, I'd rather play against our guys, study the other guys' film, and then use mind games and, you know, try to outsmart somebody. But when you're practicing with somebody, they're looking at all your formations and they're listening to the cadence. And by the time game time comes, sometimes they're pretty knowledgeable of what you do. Okay, they're listening to your calls in practice, like. Most defensive linemen are boneheads, but they're not all stupid, okay? There's only a few different calls you make on a defensive line. Ace, deuce, tray, ABC. After a while, you look at the way they block it, you know what's going to happen. So the great ones figured out what all these calls were, and they adjusted accordingly. The dumb ones just played and didn't last very long. You know, I was talking to a bunch of former players about the game, and I was saying this, that it's a lot of it's played in your mind, brother. A lot of it's played in your mind. Most of it. And there's a lot of people that get outsmarted on the football field. But they're in Jacksonville. They're going to be banging. There's no way around that. You're going to be running into some guys that you haven't been running into lately. And, you know, some of them will enjoy it. Myself, I didn't care for it. There's a lot of other things I'd rather be doing than going all the way to Jacksonville and, you know, playing against these guys. Once again, you're going to be playing on Thursday. So good riddance to them and good luck, and I hope that they look good on Thursday. Now, I know a lot of you Buccaneer fans, or all you Buccaneer fans, watched Hard Knocks last week, as did I. I thought it was fluffy. I was enjoyable. But, I mean, the Jameis part to me was, I thought it was gorgeous, okay? Because, you know, nobody likes dude that's come from, you know, money, do they? It's not a great story. Somebody's brought up in Beverly Hills and they've had everything their whole lives and they end up being a quarterback. You had everything. Dude, there ain't nobody with nothing in Bessemer, Alabama. Nobody has nothing. And, you know, you got to figure Jameis Winston and his family are, the most well-off there. The house that they're in is still raggedy. I don't know why these people are still in that house, because it looks, I mean, they're spray painting on the wall and, you know, they're peeing off the stoop. And like this, Jameis, I thought Jameis was a star, okay? For him to show where he's from, to be entertaining, and, you know, to me, letting you into that is great. And you can tell that, you know, Jameis is just loved by everybody. I mean, he is. It doesn't matter if you have money, if you don't have money. I think Jameis is on the same level. And, you know, Jameis isn't the most eloquent person in the world, but he's very entertaining, and he understands, okay? He very rarely says stupid things. And once again, he's not eloquent, but he says very intelligent things if you listen to him. And I don't know if that's his makeup. I don't know if that's the way he's been groomed. But he speaks like a leader all the time. And once again, I don't think people fall into that leadership role. I think you're really born a leader in one way or another. I mean, I think I was born a leader in one way or another, but I just wasn't the guy to stand in front of everybody and rah-rah. It wasn't me. But, you know, if you get nominated as a captain on your team, that means you led in some way or not. So, you know, I was nominated a captain on my college team, so in some way or another, I led. So I think leaders are born. Now, I love Dirk Cutter. And you've never heard me say that about Lovie Smith. You never heard me say that about John Gruden. You never heard me say me about Raheem. Definitely not Greg Schiano. Definitely not. I love Dirk Cutter, what he's about. And to me, his message is perfect. He came out, he says, this is our message, earn it. Everybody has to earn it. Once again, talking about being great is perfect, but being great is different. You have to earn it. And the Buccaneers are not the team. Okay, when you talk about the Baltimore Ravens, when you talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, they have a mentality already, okay? When you talk about New England, obviously, like, it doesn't really matter what New England does in the preseason. They're going to be okay. Pittsburgh, you know, is going to put out a tough defense there. The Buccaneers have to earn a mentality. They don't have a mentality. If you say Buccaneer football, it used to mean, and when I say used to, I mean 02 and before. 02 to 96. Not even 96, 97, because that's where they earned their mentality. But they were developing it in 96, the year that my final year here. But they have to earn something. They haven't earned anything yet. So they got to put it in, because when they step on the field, to this point, nobody's really fearing anything. There's no fear in anybody else's eyes. At this point, they have to earn that. And everybody's saying they're going to make the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. Got to earn that. And they got to put work in, all right? So to me, it is important what they look like when they go to Jacksonville, because there's not going to be that many more dress rehearsals. There's going to be this one more, and then the fourth preseason game in this day and age, nobody plays. I don't even know if they even dress guys out anymore. So you better figure out a way to earn a mentality in the next couple preseason games. But going back to Hard Knocks, once again, it it did a good job of showing you what people were about. You know, I thought, you know, the Gerald McCoy thing was a weird, you know, interlude for when you go from Jameis in Bessemer to Gerald McCoy in this, you know, lavish mansion. His twins are just the cutest thing. That little boy, you just want to squeeze him. I would put money in Gerald McCoy's little boy right now that he's going to be a baller because he is thick. I don't know how old he is, but he looked like he was 5, and I think he was like 5 months maybe. But he looks real thick, and he was speaking. It seemed like he was 10 years old when he was speaking. He seemed already very, very intelligent. But Gerald McCoy, he's a very intelligent person. So I thought that was interesting. And really, I just like, you know, I said this one was fluffy because the Hard Knocks that I like is when I see stuff in meeting rooms, okay? When I see coaches going off on players, when I'm seeing fights in camp. Like, not fluffy stories, okay? The first one was fluffy stories. It was a fluffy story about Jameis and a fluffy story about Gerald and everything's fluffy and the Bucks are going to be great, fluffy. But let's see. I like to see Dirk getting on Jameis. I like that. I like to see offensive linemen going against defensive linemen. That's what I like. That's the stuff you don't normally get a chance to see. So that's what I want to see going forward. And, you know, for these young kids out there, the new star is going to be a young kid, Joe Dirt. What was his name? Riley Bulla or something like that. And you know what? This is what Hard Knocks does, okay? Why would I have ever heard of this Riley Bulla guy, okay? He's a third-string middle linebacker for the Buccaneers. He doesn't look the part, really. After Hard Knocks, I'll be damned if every time I watch film, I was looking for him. Every time. Because I didn't know nobody else. So that's how you become a star, you know, in a funny way. If this kid makes the team, he's going to be a popular person because he has the mentality that a lot of people watching the game want to have, okay? He's kind of brash, doesn't give a crap, getting after people. And if he doesn't do tough, he's got to go. So he's got to do tough. He's going to be a kid that he would have to be on every single special teams, all of them. And I've talked to a lot of kids going off to college, and I talked to a lot of people that are going into the NFL because, you know, I've been through it, and sometimes people need some advice. My advice to anybody going into college as a freshman from high school, I look them in the face and I'll say, be ready to fail. And I've said this in front of their parents before, and parent goes, what do you mean be ready to fail? I go, be ready to fail because you're going to fail right off the bat. A lot of people go home after that. Be ready to fail and put it in because you're going to get your ass kicked at the beginning. That's just the way it is. Because if you're an 18-year-old kid going to college going against a 22-year-old kid who's a man, they're going to kick your ass. And I know you used to be a man in high school. You ain't the man no more, okay? So be ready to fail and endure that and make it through it. That's my message if you're going from high school to college. If you're going from college to the NFL and you're not a first-round pick, this is my advice. Play special teams because you're probably not going to be a starter, okay? If you're not a starter and you go on special teams, that's your bread and butter. There's people that make it into the league and play special teams, and that's all they do. And a lot of times, you'll play special teams until it's your time because a lot of times you're not ready to play in your position right off the bat because you're just not strong enough and you're not enough. And you could excel in special team and stick around, and then one day, lo and behold, they'll stick you in there and be ready to go. But playing special teams and excelling special teams, to me, is the most important thing when you're a young kid jumping into the NFL. Now, I was looking at they had a restaurant scene. I didn't even get really a chance to see what restaurant they were in. I know Pin Chasers got a lot of love here, the bowling alley. And then, you know, I like the fact that I saw people doing Bikram yoga. And what else? The other thing I love is just seeing young kids trying to figure it out. Because when you're a young football player, when they give you that playbook, you know, every day or every practice you go out there, you know, they're going to put in five more plays. And the problem is they keep on accumulating. And you got to kind of remember what you did the week, the day before and the week before. And it becomes overwhelming at times. So just seeing some of these young kids out there struggling, and that's the kind of stuff that I like to see. And then they had the little, what they call hazing now. It's not really hazing, but they had the rookies go up there and sing. I thought that was funny. And, you know, the stuff that I went through. You know, I went through, had 11 training camps. I've seen a lot of this stuff, and it's all pretty darn interesting. And that's why I absolutely love Hard Knocks. And like I said, I love Dirk Cutter. I love what he represents. And, you know, I'm ready for an excited season. And I'm looking around, and I ain't seen it like this in a long, long time. I mean, it's been a while. Golden Bucks camp, there's a feel over there, okay? No doubt about that. I'm sure there's going to be a great feel opening when they kick off and they kick off this season. But then you got to cross the line and play football. So this season, I feel good. Hopefully, as the season progresses, I don't have to go back and listen to, you know, these kind of shows and go, damn, I was wrong about a lot of things. Because a lot of things have to happen for you to be successful and win 10 games. That's the goal of the Buccaneers, to win 10 football games and find a way to get into the playoffs. And then after watching Hard Knocks, I think I'm going to finally – I watched half of Game of Thrones, and I liked it. And I think I'm going to have to watch Game of Thrones, because everybody's watching damn Game of Thrones. Everybody, referees, coaches, players, everybody's watching Game of Thrones. So I think I'm going to go in there and finally do it. I might even start that today. Anyways, this has been wonderful. In the Trenches, it'll be happening every single week. If you guys want to contact me, if you have any kind of question or you have something to say about the podcast or something that you want to hear, I'm actually going to be playing fantasy football this year on purpose, because I played it once and I hated it, and I'm playing it again this year just so I'm versed at it. So I'll be talking a little fantasy football throughout the season as well, because it's kind of a big deal. It's kind of a big money maker, fantasy football is. So we'll be dabbling in that a little bit. So if you want to email me, IanBeckles@RadioInfluence, if you want to talk about fantasy football, you want to talk about the Buccaneers or any other teams out there, it's all good. So I'm enjoying talking football. I got a whole week of this, you know, building up, and I'm ready to talk football. I'll be doing that every single week. So I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you tune in again next week. Have a wonderful, safe week. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter @IanBeckles for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is a Valor Hour Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We are joined by Slick Nick Gertz, 7-2 professional mixed martial arts fighter. He prepares to return to action August 19th at the Bellator Monster Energy Series at Bristol Motor Speedway.
Your last fight was supposed to be at Border Wars, you know, Ruben War. He pulled out of that one. He's talking a little bit of talk, you know, leading into that one. it tends to happen with you from time to time. But, you know, it ended up putting you on the shelf for a little bit longer than what you were hoping for. Your last fight was in March now. So it's been you'll have been out 5 months or so in between fights. You know, talk about that break, even though it wasn't by choice. You know, I know you started over it with Frankie now. You know, I expect that we're going to see maybe a little bit different physicality in you coming up here next week.
Oh, absolutely, man. Frankie's turned me into an absolute madman, man. It's crazy what you know, what working that hard can do to you physically, you know, and mentally. So, you know, I'm prepared to push every second of this fight, control the pace 100%. And as far as the break goes, man, I think it was great. I got to go to the beach, you know, and relax and hang out and everything, kind of clear my mind a little bit. So that was great. That was a great thing to have. But yeah, well, I'm definitely excited for my first fight back in 5 months for it to be on the Bellator card. So that's really exciting.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Ken, your opponent, Ken Beverly. It's a very exciting matchup from my perspective, because you guys have a mutual opponent in Stephen Hague. And of course, you went to war with him, a very close fight. You guys battled on the feet. You, of course, battled on the ground. You got the leg locks involved. I know you got like to do those. He likes to do them. Ken Beverly, you got the victory. Ken Beverly faced Stephen, of course, up at Border Wars. And I think that Ken was probably, you know, the underdog. A lot of people thought that Stephen was going to take him out, and that did not happen. Ken Beverly put a lot of pressure on. He was able to get the jump on Stephen and get that victory. So, again, I think this is going to be a very interesting matchup. What is your take?
Stephen's a great fighter and everything. Stephen's just too nice of a guy. You know, he grabbed that leg lock and he didn't rip it off. If I touch something on Ken Beverly, it's going home with me. I'll rip his shoulder off. I'll rip his knee off because the kid doesn't tap. I mean, that's plain as day. You can watch him. He's tough and he's not going to tap. So I'm whatever I touch, I'm taking it home, and I hope he taps quick.
The Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.